Some of them were living at the station, others in the neighborhood. There were 6 or 7 of them, all between 12 and 15, and 2 of them came from our town. The boys played together, and on the 4th or 5th day of Collier's stay at the station, a mad bet was made by the foolish boys. Collier, who was almost the youngest of the party and rather looked down upon by the others in consequence, was moved by vanity or by reckless bravado to bet them 2 rubles that he would lie down between the rails at night when the 11 o'clock train was due, and would lie there without moving while the train rolled over him at full speed. It is true they made a preliminary investigation, from which it appeared that it was possible to lie so flat between the rails that the train could pass over without touching, but to lie there was no joke. Collier maintained stoutly that he would. At first they laughed at him, called him a little liar, a braggart, but that only egged him on. What piqued him most was that these boys of 15 turned up their noses at him too superciliously, and were at first disposed to treat him as a small boy, not fit to associate with them, and that was an unendurable insult. And so it was resolved to go in the evening, 1/2 mile from the station, so that the train might have time to get up full speed after leaving the station the boys assembled. It was a pitch, dark night without a moon. At the time fixed, Collier lay down between the rails. The 5 others who had taken the bet waited among the bushes below the embankment, their hearts beating with suspense, which was followed by alarm and remorse. At last they heard in the distance the rumble of the train leaving the station. 2 red lights gleamed out of the darkness, the monster roared as it approached. "Run, run away from the rails," the boys cried to Collier from the bushes, breathless with terror. But it was too late, the train darted up and flew past. The boys rushed to Collier. He lay without moving. They began pulling at him, lifting him up. He suddenly got up and walked away without a word. Then he explained that he had lain there as though he were insensible to frighten them, but the fact was that he really had lost consciousness, as he confessed long after to his mother. In this way his reputation as a desperate character was established forever. He returned home to the station as white as a sheet. Next day he had a slight attack of nervous fever, but he was in high spirits and well pleased with himself. The incident did not become known at once, but when they came back to the town it penetrated to the school and even reached the ears of the masters. But then Collier's mother hastened to entreat the masters on her boy's behalf, and in the end Dardanelov, a respected and influential teacher, exerted himself in his favor, and the affair was ignored. Dardanelov was a middle-aged bachelor, who had been passionately in love with Madame Krasetkin for many years past, and had once already, about a year previously, ventured, trembling with fear and the delicacy of his sentiments, to offer her most respectfully his hand in marriage. But she refused him resolutely, feeling that to accept him would be an act of treachery to her son, though Dardanelov had, to judge from certain mysterious symptoms, reason for believing that he was not an object of aversion to the charming but too chaste and tender-hearted widow. Collier's mad prank seemed to have broken the ice, and Dardanelov was rewarded for his intercession by a suggestion of hope. The suggestion, it is true, was a faint one, but then Dardanelov was such a paragon of purity and delicacy that it was enough for the time being to make him perfectly happy. He was fond of the boy, though he would have felt it beneath him to try and win him over, and was severe and strict with him in class. Collier, too, kept him at a respectful distance. He learned his lessons perfectly, he was 2nd in his class, was reserved with Dardanelov, and the whole class firmly believed that Collier was so good at universal history that he could beat even Dardanelov. Collier did indeed ask him the question, "Who founded Troy?" To which Dardanelov had made a very vague reply, referring to the movements and migrations of races, to the remoteness of the period, to the mythical legends. But the question, "Who had founded Troy?" that is, what individuals, he could not answer, and even for some reason regarded the question as idle and frivolous. But the boys remained convinced that Dardanelov did not know who founded Troy. Collier had read of the founders of Troy in Smaragdov, whose history was among the books in his father's bookcase. In the end, all the boys became interested in the question, who it was that had founded Troy, but Krasotkin would not tell his secret, and his reputation for knowledge remained unshaken. After the incident on the railway, a certain change came over Kolya's attitude to his mother. When Anna Fyodorovna, Madame Krasotkin, heard of her son's exploit, she almost went out of her mind with horror. She had such terrible attacks of hysterics, lasting with intervals for several days, that Kolya, seriously alarmed at last, promised on his honor that such pranks should never be repeated. He swore on his knees before the holy image, and swore by the memory of his father, at Madame Krasotkin's instance, and the manly Kolya burst into tears like a boy of six. And all that day the mother and son were constantly rushing into each other's arms, sobbing. Next day Kolya woke up as unfeeling as before, but he had become more silent, more modest, sterner, and more thoughtful. 6 weeks later, it is true, he got into another scrape, which even brought his name to the ears of our Justice of the Peace, but it was a scrape of quite another kind, amusing, foolish, and he did not, as it turned out, take the leading part in it, but was only implicated in it. But of this later. His mother still fretted and trembled, but the more uneasy she became, the greater were the hopes of Dardanelov. It must be noted that Kolya understood and divined what was in Dardanelov's heart and, of course, despised him profoundly for his feelings. He had in the past been so tactless as to show this contempt before his mother, hinting vaguely that he knew what Dardanelov was after. But from the time of the railway incident his behavior in this respect also was changed. He did not allow himself the remotest allusion to the subject and began to speak more respectfully of Dardanelov before his mother, which the sensitive woman at once appreciated with boundless gratitude. But at the slightest mention of Dardanelov by a visitor in Kolya's presence, she would flush as pink as a rose. At such moments Kolya would either stare out of the window scowling, or would investigate the state of his boots, or would shout angrily for Perezvon, the big, shaggy, mangy dog, which he had picked up a month before, brought home, and kept for some reason secretly indoors, not showing him to any of his schoolfellows. He bullied him frightfully, teaching him all sorts of tricks, so that the poor dog howled for him whenever he was absent at school, and when he came in, whined with delight, rushed about as if he were crazy, begged, lay down on the ground pretending to be dead, and so on, in fact, showed all the tricks he had taught him, not at the word of command, but simply from the zeal of his excited and grateful heart. I have forgotten, by the way, to mention that Kolya Krasotkin was the boy stabbed with a penknife by the boy already known to the reader as the son of Captain Snegiryov. Ilushor had been defending his father when the schoolboys jeered at him, shouting the nickname Wisp of Tow. Chapter 2, Children and so on. That frosty, snowy, and windy day in November, Kolya Krasotkin was sitting at home. It was Sunday and there was no school. It had just struck 11, and he particularly wanted to go out on very urgent business, but he was left alone in charge of the house, for it so happened that all its elder inmates were absent owing to a sudden and singular event. Madame Krasotkin had let two little rooms, separated from the rest of the house by a passage, to a doctor's wife with her two small children. This lady was the same age as Anna Fyodorovna, and a great friend of hers. Her husband, the doctor, had taken his departure 12 months before, going first to Onberg and then to Tashkent, and for the last 6 months she had not heard a word from him. Had it not been for her friendship with Madame Krasotkin, which certainly have completely dissolved away in tears. And now, to add to her misfortunes, Katerina, her only servant, was suddenly moved the evening before to announce, to her mistress's amazement, that she proposed to bring a child into the world before morning. It seemed almost miraculous to everyone that no one had noticed the probability of it before. The astounded doctor's wife decided to move Katerina while there was still time to an establishment in the town kept by a midwife for such emergencies. As she set great store by her servant, she promptly carried out this plan and remained the looking after her. By the morning all Madame Krasetkin's friendly sympathy and energy were called upon to render assistance and appeal to someone for help in the case. So both the ladies were absent from home, the Krasetkin's servant, Agafya, had gone out to the market, and Kolia was thus left for a time to protect and look after the kids, that is, the son and daughter of the doctor's wife, who were left alone. Kolia was not afraid of taking care of the house. Besides, he had Perezvon, who had been told to lie flat, without moving, under the bench in the hall. Every time Kolia, walking to and fro through the rooms, came into the hall, the dog shook his head and gave two loud and insinuating taps on the floor with his tail, but alas! The whistle did not sound to release him. Kolia looked sternly at the luckless dog, who relapsed again into obedient rigidity. The one thing that troubled Kolia was the kids. He looked, of course, with the utmost scorn on Katerina's unexpected adventure, but he was very fond of the bereaved kiddies, and had already taken them a picture book. Nastya, the elder, a girl of 8, could read, and Kostya, the boy, aged 7, was very fond of being read to by her. Krasetkin could, of course, have provided more diverting entertainment for them. He could have made them stand side by side and played soldiers with them, or sent them hiding all over the house. He had done so more than once before and was not above doing it, so much so that a report once spread at school that Krasetkin played horses with the little lodgers at home, prancing with his head on one side like a trace horse. But Krasetkin haughtily parried this thrust, pointing out that to play horses with boys of one's own age, boys of 13, would certainly be disgraceful at this state, but that he did it for the sake of the kids because he liked them, and no one had a right to call him to account for his feelings. The two kids adored him. But on this occasion he was in no mood for games. He had very important business of his own before him, something almost mysterious. Meanwhile time was passing and Agafya, with whom he could have left the children, would not come back from market. He had several times already crossed the passage, opened the door of the lodger's room and looked anxiously at the kids who were sitting over the book, as he had bidden them. Every time he opened the door they grinned at him, hoping he would come in and would do something delightful and amusing. But Kolia was bothered and did not go in. At last it struck 11 and he made up his mind, once for all, that if that damned Agafya did not come back within 10 minutes he should go out without waiting for her, making the kids promise, of course, to be brave when he was away, not to be naughty, not to cry from fright. With this idea he put on his wadded winter overcoat with its catskin fur collar, slung his satchel round his shoulder, and, regardless of his mother's constantly reiterated entreaties that he would always put on galoshes in such cold weather, he looked at them contemptuously as he crossed the hall and went out with only his boots on. Perezvon, seeing him in his outdoor clothes, began tapping nervously, yet vigorously, on the floor with his tail. Twitching all over, he even uttered a plaintive whine. But Kolia, seeing his dog's passionate excitement, decided that it was a breach of discipline, kept him for another minute under the bench, and only when he had opened the door into the passage, whistled for him. The dog leapt up like a mad creature and rushed bounding before him rapturously. Kolia opened the door to peep at the kids. They were both sitting as before at the table, not reading but warmly disputing about something. The children often argued together about various exciting problems of life, and Nastya, being the elder, always got the best of it. If Kostya did not agree with her, he almost always appealed to Kolia Krasetkin, and his verdict was regarded as infallible by both of them. This time the kids' discussion rather interested Krasetkin, and he stood still in the passage to listen. The children saw he was listening and that made them dispute with even greater energy. "I shall never, never believe," Nastya prattled, "that the old women find babies among the cabbages in the kitchen garden. It's winter now and there are no cabbages, and so the old woman couldn't have taken Katerina a daughter. Kolya whistled to himself. Or perhaps they do bring babies from somewhere, but Kostya stared at Nastya and listened, pondering profoundly. Nastya, how silly you are, he said at last, firmly and calmly. How can Katerina have a baby when she isn't married? Nastya was exasperated. You know nothing about it, she snapped irritably. Perhaps she has a husband, only he is in prison, so now she's got a baby. But is her husband in prison? The matter, of fact, Kostya inquired gravely. Or, I tell you what, Nastya interrupted impulsively, completely rejecting and forgetting her first hypothesis. She hasn't a husband, you are right there, but she wants to be married, and so she's been thinking of getting married, and thinking of it till now she's got it, that is, not a husband but a baby. Well, perhaps so, Kostya agreed, entirely vanquished. But you didn't say so before. So how could I tell? Come, kiddies, said Kolya, stepping into the room. You're terrible people, I see. And Perezvon with you, grinned Kostya, and began snapping his fingers and calling Perezvon. I am in a difficulty, kids, Krasitkin began solemnly, and you must help me. Agafya must have broken her leg, since she has not turned up till now, that's certain. I must go out. Will you let me go? The children looked anxiously at one another. Their smiling faces showed signs of uneasiness, but they did not yet fully grasp what was expected of them. You won't be naughty while I am gone. You won't climb on the cupboard and break your legs. You won't be frightened alone and cry. A look of profound despondency came into the children's faces. And I could show you something as a reward, a little copper cannon which can be fired with real gunpowder. The children's faces instantly brightened. Show us the cannon, said Kostya, beaming all over. Krasitkin put his hand in his satchel, and pulling out a little bronze cannon stood it on the table. Ah, you are bound to ask that. Look, it's on wheels. He rolled the toy on along the table. And it can be fired off, too. It can be loaded with shot and fired off. It can kill anyone, you've only got to aim at anybody, and Krasitkin explained where the powder had to be put, where the shot should be rolled in, showing a tiny hole like a touch hole, and told them that it kicked when it was fired. The children listened with intense interest. What particularly struck their imagination was that the cannon kicked. And have you got any powder? Nastya inquired. Yes. Show us the powder, too, she drawled with a smile of entreaty. Krasitkin dived again into his satchel and pulled out a small flask containing a little real gunpowder. He had some shot, too, in a screw of paper. He even uncorked the flask and shook a little powder into the palm of his hand. One has to be careful there's no fire about, or it would blow up and kill us all, Krasitkin warned them sensationally. The children gazed at the powder with an awe-stricken alarm that only intensified their enjoyment. But Kostya liked the shot better. And does the shot burn? He inquired. No. It doesn't. Give me a little shot, he asked in an imploring voice. I'll give you a little shot, here, take it. But don't show it to your mother till I come back, or she'll be sure to think it's gunpowder, and will die of fright and give you a thrashing. Mother never does whip us, Nastya observed at once. I know, I only said it to finish the sentence. And don't you ever deceive your mother except just this once, until I come back. And so, kiddies, can I go out? You won't be frightened and cry when I'm gone. We shall all cry, drawled Kostya, on the verge of tears already. We shall cry, we shall be sure to cry, Nastya chimed in with timid haste. Oh, children, children, how fraught with peril are your years. There's no help for it, chickens, I shall have to stay with you I don't know how long. And time is passing, ugh. Tell Perezvon to pretend to be dead. Kostya begged. There's no help for it, we must have recourse to Perezvon. I, Perezvon. And Kolya began giving orders to the dog, who performed all his tricks. He was a rough-haired dog, of medium size, with a coat of a sort of lilac, grey colour. He was blind in his right eye, and his left ear was torn. He whined and jumped, stood and walked on his hind legs, lay on his back with his paws in the air, rigid as though he were dead. While this last performance was going on, the door opened and Agafya, Madame Krasitkin's servant, a stout woman of 40, marked with small pox, appeared in the doorway. She had come back from market and had a bag full of provisions in her hand. Holding up the bag of provisions in her left hand, she stood still to watch the dog. Though Kolya had been so anxious for her return, he did not cut short the performance, and after keeping Perezvon dead for the usual time, at last he whistled to him. The dog jumped up and began bounding about in his joy at having done his duty. Only think, a dog! Agafya observed sententiously. Why are you late, female? Asked Krasitkin sternly. Female, indeed. Go on with you, you brat.
Brat?
Yes, a brat. What is it to you if I'm late? If I'm late, you may be sure I have good reason, muttered Agafya, busying herself about the stove, without a trace of anger or displeasure in her voice. She seemed quite pleased, in fact, to enjoy a skirmish with her merry young master. Listen, you frivolous young woman, Krasitkin began, getting up from the sofa, can you swear by all you hold sacred in the world and something else besides, that you will watch vigilantly over the kids in my absence? I am going out. And what am I going to swear for? Laughed Agafya. I shall look after them without that. No, you must swear on your eternal salvation. Else I shan't go. Well, don't then. What does it matter to me? It's cold out, stay at home. Kids, Kolya turned to the children, this woman will stay with you till I come back or till your mother comes, for she ought to have been back long ago. She will give you some lunch, too. You'll give them something, Agafya, won't you? That I can do. Good, bye, chickens, I go with my heart at rest. And you, Granny, he added gravely, in an undertone, as he passed Agafya, I hope you'll spare their tender years and not tell them any of your old woman's nonsense about Katerina. I, Perezvon. Get along with you. Retorted Agafya, really angry this time. Ridiculous boy. You want a whipping for saying such things, that's what you want. Chapter 3, The Schoolboy. But Kolya did not hear her. At last he could go out. As he went out at the gate he looked round him, shrugged up his shoulders, and saying it is freezing, went straight along the street and turned off to the right towards the market place. When he reached the last house but one before the market place he stopped at the gate, pulled a whistle out of his pocket, and whistled with all his might as though giving a signal. He had not to wait more than a minute before a rosy, cheeked boy of about 11, wearing a warm, neat and even stylish coat, darted out to meet him. This was Smurov, a boy in the preparatory class, two classes below Kolya Krasitkin, son of a well-to-do official. Apparently he was forbidden by his parents to associate with Krasitkin, who was well known to be a desperately naughty boy, so Smurov was obviously slipping out on the sly. He was, if the reader has not forgotten, one of the group of boys who 2 months before had thrown stones at Ilushor. He was the one who told Alishor about Ilushor. I've been waiting for you for the last hour, Krasitkin, said Smurov stolidly, and the boys strode towards the market place. I am late, answered Krasitkin. I was detained by circumstances. You won't be thrashed for coming with me? Come, I say. I'm never thrashed. And you've got Perezvon with you?
Yes.
You're taking him, too?
Yes.
Ah. If it were only Zuchka. That's impossible. Zuchka's non-existent. Zuchka is lost in the mists of obscurity.
Ah.
Couldn't we do this? Smurov suddenly stood still. You see, Ilushor says that Zuchka was a shaggy, greyish, smoky-looking dog like Perezvon. Couldn't you tell him this is Zuchka, and he might believe you?
Boy, shun a lie,
That's one thing, even with a good object, that's another. Above all, I hope you've not told them anything about my coming. Heaven forbid. I know what I am about. But you won't comfort him with Perezvon, said Smurov, with a sigh. You know his father, the captain, the Wisp of Tow, told us that he was going to bring him a real mastiff pup, with a black nose, today. He thinks that would comfort Ilushor, but I doubt it. And how is Ilushor?
Ah, he is bad, very bad.
I believe he's in consumption, he is quite conscious, but his breathing. His breathing's gone wrong. The other day he asked to have his boots on to be led round the room. He tried to walk, but he couldn't stand.
Ah, I told you before, father, he said, that those boots were no good.
I could never walk properly in them. He fancied it was his boots that made him stagger, but it was simply weakness, really. He won't live another week. Hertz and Stube is looking after him. Now they are rich again, they've got heaps of money. They are rogues. Who are rogues? Doctors and the whole crew of quacks collectively, and also, of course, individually. I don't believe in medicine. It's a useless institution. I mean to go into all that. But what's that sentimentality you've got up there? The whole class seems to be there every day. Not the whole class, it's only 10 of our fellows who go to see him every day. There's nothing in that. What I don't understand in all this is the part that Alexei Karamazov is taking in it. His brother's going to be tried tomorrow or next day for such a crime, and yet he has so much time to spend on sentimentality with boys. There's no sentimentality about it. You are going yourself now to make it up with Ilushor? Make it up with him? What an absurd expression. But I allow no one to analyze my actions. And how pleased Ilushor will be to see you. He has no idea that you are coming. Why was it you wouldn't come all this time? Smurov cried with sudden warmth. My dear boy, that's my business, not yours. I am going of myself because I choose to, but you've all been hauled there by Alexei Karamazov, there's a difference, you know. And how do you know? I may not be going to make it up at all. It's a stupid expression. It's not Karamazov at all, it's not his doing. Our fellows began going there of themselves. Of course, they went with Karamazov at first. And there's been nothing of that sort of silliness. First one went, and then another. His father was awfully pleased to see us. You know he will simply go out of his mind if Ilushor dies. He sees that Ilushor's dying. And he seems so glad we've made it up with Ilushor. Ilushor asked after you, that was all. He just asks and says no more. His father will go out of his mind or hang himself. He behaved like a madman before. You know he is a very decent man. We made a mistake then. It's all the fault of that murderer who beat him then. Karamazov's a riddle to me all the same. I might have made his acquaintance long ago, but I like to have a proper pride in some cases. Besides, I have a theory about him which I must work out and verify. Kolya subsided into dignified silence. Smurov, too, was silent. Smurov, of course, worshipped Krasitkin and never dreamed of putting himself on a level with him. Now he was tremendously interested at Kolya's saying that he was going of himself to see Ilushor. He felt that there must be some mystery in Kolya's suddenly taking it into his head to go to him that day. They crossed the marketplace, in which at that hour were many loaded wagons from the country and a great number of live fowls. The market women were selling rolls, cottons and threads, etc., in their booths. These Sunday markets were naively called fairs in the town, and there were many such fairs in the year. Perezvon ran about in the wildest spirits, sniffing about first one side, then the other. When he met other dogs they zealously smelt each other over according to the rules of canine etiquette. I like to watch such realistic scenes, Smurov, said Kolya suddenly. Have you noticed how dogs sniff at one another when they meet? It seems to be a law of their nature.
Yes, it's a funny habit.
No,
It's not funny, you are wrong there. There's nothing funny in nature, however funny it may seem to man with his prejudices.